And welcome to another episode of Gopher Gridiron Radio. I'm Luke Buer.
And I am GopherIllustrated.com publisher Ryan Burns. And we welcome you guys back to the defense and special teams preview. One of the ones that Luke Buer has circled on the calendar, I assume, since early part of January, that he can't wait to get back into a little special teams talk. We have to, unfortunately, talk about a very putrid 2023 defense and how could it possibly improve. But, Luke, before we get into all of that, how are you today?
I'm doing all right, man. I've actually had this circled since signing day last year. You know how much I love to talk special teams. You know how much I love to get you going. So I've been looking forward to this one for quite some time. And really, it's going to be bittersweet because this is probably the last time that we're going to get to preview seasons where Dragan Kesic and Australian now Mark Crawford are going to be leading the kicking efforts at the University of Minnesota. So, you know, for those of you that are special teams diehards like Ryan and I, this is kind of the beginning of the end.
Dragan Kesic has to be... This is going to be my 14th season covering this team. Among the most personable, certainly specialists, if not players, I've ever covered. Because there's nothing that he's afraid to broach with anyone. He's also a taller guy, and that's where at 6'3", I think he feels very confident no matter what he says. People aren't going to look at him a strange way. And then Mark Crawford, my favorite Aussie, someone I've spent a lot of time talking about, and with him, with telling him I'll never go to Australia because the bugs there are the size of small houses, and him telling me that's only in the country. And I said, I'm going to believe that you mean the country of Australia and not out of urban centers. But just a great dude, Dragan Kesic, great guy. Got to spend some time with him at Big Ten Media Days. But maybe at this new age of 32, Luke Buer, I'll turn a page. I'll become less cranky. Do you think I can achieve that in this new age for me?
You know, even though we've moved on from the Rob Wenger era of Gopher special teams, I think the crankiness has nothing to do with him, and it's just mostly you. Okay. <Yeah. laughs> So we'll talk some defense. We'll talk some special teams. I think also we probably should at least touch on the fact that there was an open practice. I do recognize that this got moved forward an hour due to some inclement weather. I wasn't able to attend due to commitments that I had already made previously. It would have been really fun to go. It looked like it was a nice night at the bank, albeit a little bit warm. But what was it like, Ryan, to see some live football once again?
See, here's what I'm going to lead with, Luke. I'm a little bit more nervous now to bash my favorite lack of communications at times, because I had a Gopher staff member come up to me and say that he started listening to the Gopher Gridiron Radio podcast.
I'm sorry to that person.
But here's what I'll say. Luke, it would have been nice to know more than for the fans a few days out. But I don't know. Heaven forbid. Well, look, I'm just happy... I'm just happy I know my schedule from now until the North Carolina game. Look, beggars ain't going to be choosers at this point. But, yes, there was a practice, and thankfully they did move it up an hour, because the moment
they needed to.
We got done on the field in terms of with interviews, it started to pour.
Yeah, so they needed to because of the inclement weather that was coming. So that I don't blame them for the short notice. In general, though, what was it like to see real football?
I think my favorite part was standing next to a different Gopher staff member on the sidelines who had a pair of binoculars on, just staring up into the stands to make sure there wasn't a Connor Stallion situation going on.
Is this real life?
As on the big screen the entire time, it says, please, no photos or videos. Thank you. No more paranoid people reside in the Twin Cities than the folks in Dinky Town, specifically in the Gibson Nagurski building. But it was nice to be able to watch an actual Gopher football practice. It's the first one I have seen with actual tackling in the year of our Lord 2024. PJ pulled out all the stops for you, Luke. It was over 2 hours. You got to see quite a bit of players. So I at least have a data point to kind of match, or at least compare and contrast to what I've heard behind the scenes here in this first week of fall camp, what I've heard throughout the entire offseason. We'll get into plenty of that, but it was nice to be able to see what everybody looks like again, make sure they're actually living, breathing human beings. And it was nice for the fans to be able to come out and support with the diaper drive as well.
Yeah. I put in a good word for you. I knew you really wanted to see some tackling. I'm glad that they came through. I know that wasn't really on the schedule initially.
Well, I appreciate,
but I pulled
as you
strings.
Love to tell me offline, you talk in text more than people know with the head coach, PJ Fleck.
Yeah.
And when you heard that, you text him and say, "Hey, my name is Luke Buehr and you need to change this because this is ridiculous." And he said, "Luke, you're absolutely right."
I think my exact text was, "Please, sir, change your best Moss tackling." So,
well, as we'll get into a little bit later on, they need to work on their tackling because last year, part of why they were so horrible defensively was because they had way too many missed tackles. But it was good. And I would say this, if you weren't able to attend, you can go to Gopher Illustrated, whether it's reading my notes. We had a few different Gopher Illustrated members have some really detailed notes in there that were vague enough to also.
Can we actually talk about this just a tiny bit? This is actually one of my favorite times of year to be a Gopher Illustrated user. Is people provide their own critiques of what they see in practice, and no shade to anyone taking critiques, but if you did a sentiment analysis on this, there would be no conclusion because it varies from like incredible optimism to like just burn it down. Like there's no in between. And it's great.
Welcome to fandom, Luke. It's either you're wearing the maroon and gold color glasses.
Yeah.
Or you're like throwing back shots saying, we're going to be lucky to win two games.
But I also love how you set this. You've kind of set some ground rules like, okay, guys, no formations, like keep it as vague as possible. Here's an example of what you could say, right? Like, I love how you put
Walsh
that out there.
Takes an end around by like a spread five out. Everybody's on the left side. Ariante Erifree's a quarterback. But you can like, and I can talk about XYZ things, but it's like, look, I'm just tired of getting talks from people over there. And it's just, look, I think it's dumb to an extent. I do. I'm rubbing my temples, Luke. I don't know what else to say about all that.
Yeah. But I do love how everybody's trying to follow the rules for the most part. I don't follow.
I mean, everybody's sort of trying to follow. Again, this is the only open practice they got. That was the only opportunity that you're going to get to watch the Gophers before North Carolina. So I hope that if you wanted to make it, you could. If you couldn't, I got my stuff up on Gopher Illustrated. We got quotes from PJ, Greg Harbo, the offensive coordinator, defensive coordinator, Corey Heatherman. I'll be back over there. If you're listening to this on Tuesday, I'll be back over there today to watch my second practice. I also get a practice the following week. So if you want to follow along, if you haven't heard already, Luke Buehr, it's $1 to join. And as we sit here today on August 5th, a great day in the history of this country, whether it's Anthony Edwards' birthday or my potential 32nd birthday.
It is your birthday. Happy birthday.
Yeah. We're running a 60% off sale. Trust me, just bite the bullet. You've listened to me long enough. Might as well get behind the paywall and see what everybody else is talking about. If you want to wait because you want to do the $1 thing, I get it. But if you want to hear what's going on at these Gopher practices, who's saying what, what's the vibe going into this Tar Heel game in just about, I think, 3.5 weeks, head on over to Gopher Illustrated.
I think I am going to text my source over at the facility and be like, "Hey, guys, how about one more practice, but you got to be a Dinky Town Athletes member." See what I can do there. I don't know. It might work. Maybe won't. Time will
tell. You got a lot. You talk in text with a lot of people that are very influential. I've only named one of them, but I'm going to keep your sources hidden.
I don't really have any sources, but I do love the idea that somebody actually believes that I have strings to pull. Okay. Okay. So we should talk a little bit about defense and special teams. I know most people assume that we're probably going to start with special teams. And I'm going to give you the choice, Ryan. Do you want to go special teams or defense first?
I'm going to go defense first. We can end with my favorite pastime.
All right. So defensively speaking, we have alluded to this already. As much as people malign the offense, the reality of the 2023 campaign for PJ Flex Golden Gophers was a problem actually with the defense, right? The defense was not up to the standards that one might expect of a group led by Joe Rossi. This did not get Joe Rossi fired, though he ended up getting a new position.
$250,000 increase year over year.
Yeah.
And he also got a fully guaranteed 3-year deal out of it. So it was a pretty sweet one for him.
Yeah, not bad deal for him. But coming off arguably his worst performance, I got a lot of shade, justifiably so, for saying I didn't think it was going to work out. But he turned this opportunity into a promotion, so good for him. And now we insert Corey Heatherman, now the defensive coordinator from Rutgers, basically number two to our friend, now I'm forgetting his name, safeties coach, Harry Simiak.
Joe Harris Simiak.
Yeah, Joe Harris Simiak. I got it. Mm-hmm. So he's number two for him. So PJ once again pilfers from the Schiano tree as Schiano pilfers from him. And that leads us to today. So I think just as a reminder, we should probably start with what kind of schematic changes should we expect, if anything, from a Joe Rossi defense to a Heatherman defense. And then we can kind of dive in from there.
I don't think you're going to see a ton of schematic changes in terms of 4-3 versus 3-4. Minnesota has recruited the last 7 years for a 4-3, or if you want to say 4-2-5 defense. So it would be foolish for PJ to then fully switch over to a 3-4, which they're not going to do. You might see some three down lineman stuff. You might not. I mean, I think they're experimenting with a lot of different things right now. And that's part of what I want to get into is if you were at the practice on Saturday, you have to remember that that's one practice of six they've had so far. It's also one practice of 20-something that they'll have before the game. What am I trying to insinuate here? Both the offense and the defense were installing things in the run game, the pass game, coverages, stunts. And that's what you saw that day was whatever they worked on in the meetings prior to. So if you thought, well, it looks like the same old offense, well, looks like the same old defense, nothing ever changes, freaking PJ Fleck. Do you like that's my
that's your armchair gopher fan. Yeah. Your armchair gopher, like passive gopher fan, but continue.
It's just whatever they were working on in meetings that day. Like to me, it looked like the offense had worked on inside zone prior to coming out on the field. So you know what they ran? Inside and mid zone. It also looked like the defense was installing some different pressure packages with three and four down linemen, different linebackers, safeties, corners, all over the place. So you just have to remember it's still going to be, especially defensively, primarily a four down, two, three linebacker, four or five defensive backs. It's not going to change too much. Now, I will say the one thing I'm going to be curious to see if it translates from his time at Maine, his time at James Madison, where he was the defensive coordinator, is if you want to know one thing about Corey Heatherman previously is the word blitz. Now, that's something we didn't see a ton of under Joe Rossi.
Yeah.
Maybe a good thing, maybe a bad thing. I would say Minnesota struggled to get pressure with four at times, and maybe he was not as confident in his secondary, which is why he didn't blitz. But now you look at the secondary for Minnesota, which we'll get into in more detail, but I'd argue you have two of the most experienced corners in the Big Ten outside with Justin Wally, who's going to be in his fourth year starting at the University of Minnesota, and then Ethan Robinson, who comes over from Bucknell, who played a ton of football there as well. So the thing I am going to be curious to see, something that's going to be on my ledger to watch in those first three games, is how much does Corey Heatherman actually blitz? And does Minnesota have the personnel at linebacker and or safety to blitz well? Do they have good blitzers? Do they not? It's one of the things I'll be watching in these next two practices to see if they're any good at it or not. We're going to find out. But primarily, Luke, this is going to look very much the same for the casual Gopher fan.
Yeah, so the Gophers last season gave up 26.7 points per game. I think the thing that will stick with me from last season was the large number of explosive plays, right? We were used to a Joe Rossi defense that would bend but not break, right? They weren't always the most opportunistic in terms of turning the other team over, but they rarely gave up the big explosive play, whereas last year That was not so much the case. So that's something obviously this defense is going to have to shore up, blitz or not.
I mean, they were just, if you want me to go through it, I can. And here's what I would say. If you just look at their Big Ten stats, which for all intents and purposes, it's what you're going to be judged on at the end of the day. How did you do in the Big Ten? You were dead last in the Big Ten in conference play and tackles for loss. You were dead last in the Big Ten in the amount of third downs converted against you in terms of a percentage. 45.5% of third downs were converted against the Gopher defense last year. They were dead last in yards per carry allowed at 4.9. Dead last in the Big Ten at 165.9 yards of rushing allowed per game. They allowed 34 touchdowns in conference play, second worst. And they allowed over 29 points a game. Everybody here listening loves to talk about offense, loves to focus more on the offense. If you score 28 points and you're still losing games, because I think you led with it, Luke, Minnesota found a way to lose games in which they scored 26, 30, and 34, and 34 points in the Big Ten last year. Everybody wants to put the blame on the offense. Why did Minnesota go 5-7 last year? Because their defense gave up a 17-point lead in the fourth quarter. Yeah, the offense didn't do its part, but you gave up 17 points in the fourth quarter to Northwestern. You allowed Purdue to go up and down the field on you for explosive plays, 49 points. And then that Illinois game where you get the backup quarterback in with at their own 15 on fourth down, and three plays later, they score the game-winning touchdown. We've talked about relentlessly on this podcast. They should have been 7-5 regular season last year, and everybody would be thinking a little bit more differently. But those Northwestern and Illinois games, to me, yeah, the offense didn't put their foot on the gas pedal. PJ Fleck likely got on the headset, made it very conservative. But if your defense could do anything, it would be a lot different. I just think people forget how bad they were defensively in the Big Ten. I'll tell you this, Luke, if you're still dead last in yards per carry and rushing yards allowed, even bottom three in this conference again in 2024, it's going to be a rough go of it again for this defense, and it's going to be a rough go again for this team. So Corey Heatherman's got a lot on his plate in year one. Expectations are there, and he's got to get them back closer to average in a lot of these categories.
All right, let's get an ad before we get into the positional breakdown. So again, we're brought to you by Home Field Apparel. This is premium licensed gear, t-shirts, sweatshirts, hats, the whole nine yards. It's vintage. It's awesome. Just awesome gear that I wear almost on the daily, weekly. I should wear it daily. But a reminder that they are running their can't miss kickoff boxes. The platinum boxes are starting to slowly release now, Ryan. I'm actually looking right now, and I can see the Auburn box, the Cincinnati box, the Clemson box, and what those look like. This includes a t-shirt. It includes a long sleeve. It includes a sweatshirt, a hat, a pair of socks. Looks like a koozie as well. This is awesome. And the Gophers box is going to get released on Tuesday. Just the designs, when I say, gets released. And then you'll be able to sign up for them as early as, I believe, the 9th or the 10th. I'll get that actual date. But Ryan, these boxes look awesome.
They do look awesome. It's customized stuff. It's stuff that when you put it on, it is incredibly comfortable to wear. Our claim to fame here is both of our wives love to steal it. I know my wife sleeps in the t-shirt. But these kickoff boxes are brand new, never before. No one else has this stuff. It's all customized. It's going to be a customized snapback, long sleeve, long or short sleeve. Sweatshirts are great. So if you want to get a peek at these, they're going to go live, I believe, on Tuesday in terms of your first look at them. Go to homefieldapparel.com, get on the list, make sure that when they go live on Friday, you use promo code GG24 at checkout to get 15% off one of these boxes. If it's your first time ordering, 15% off your first order at Home Field Apparel with promo code GG24.
Again, GG24 is going to save you 15% on your first order. This box will lock you in for all the gear that you're going to need all season long. Again, homefieldapparel.com. And also, Ryan, we're brought to you by Dinkytown Real Estate Group. A reminder for those of you that aren't familiar with Dinkytown Real Estate Group, this is a real estate group that is working with Dinkytown Athletics, meaning that they are going to take a portion of the commission that they receive. Typically, you know, the commission is split maybe somewhere around like 6% of the total price, some going to the seller, some going to the buyer, and to those real estate agents. 1% of that sale price is going to go to Dinkytown Athletes to support the sport of the buyer or seller's choice. This is a great way to move capital towards Gopher NIL initiatives. And you can do that just by buying or selling your house and working with a real estate agent that is focused on supporting Gopher Athletics.
I swear, all Team Dinkytown does is sell houses 25 plus over asking. So if you don't have a real estate agent and you're looking to buy and sell in today's market, go to teamdinkytown.com or you can call them today at 612-250-8562.
All right, so we should get into the positional breakdowns here, Ryan, for your Gopher defense. You know, defensive line is probably looked at as a strength of this squad this season, both from like a depth perspective and just a high level talent perspective, right? So let's start there. Maybe we'll start on the inside at defensive tackle and then work our way to defensive end. But you know, who can you expect to get major minutes for this defensive line? And then who do you expect to have big roles?
To me, the way I view defensive tackle anyway, there's one guy in a tier by himself, and I think some people who went to the practice on Saturday would agree. Shakopee's Devin Eastern's pretty good. And you saw him get his feet wet in the Big Ten for the first time last year, finished with an above-average Pro Football Focus grade in his first significant action, which I think is a positive sign. But the thing you watch is he is just so big, strong, and powerful. Whether he's going against Quinn Carroll or Tyler Cooper or Greg Johnson, he was having pretty consistent success back there. Now, we're talking about two guards there in Cooper and Carroll who are both seniors. Yes, Greg Johnson's a little bit younger, but that's starting quality offensive linemen that he's having success against. Now, to me, the only thing I'm hesitant about is I know that he was dealing with a shoulder injury last year, and he had to get taken out on Saturday with what looked like another shoulder deal this year. So health, I'm hoping for the best for him, but whether it's at one technique or three technique, I think you're going to see Eastern play both this year. I would imagine he probably starts at one technique because of the other guy I'm about to mention. But I have, if it hits right for Devin Eastern, we're going to be talking about him potentially making an all Big Ten team at the end of the season. I think he has that type of ceiling if he can remain fresh, if he can remain consistent, and if he can remain healthy. Now, I mentioned he's in a tier by himself, and then we drop down a little bit. And I want to see from these next guys if Minnesota's going to be able to stop the run, or heaven forbid, someone not named Devin Eastern is going to get a pass rush from the A and B gaps. I hope it comes from somebody named Jalen Logan Redding. You may have heard of him because he started for Minnesota at five technique last year. He was the one who split time with Ja Joyner. Jalen played about 50-50 between outside on end and inside. More so, he played end on rundowns. He played three technique on passing downs. But now he's bulked up. He's around 290, 295 pounds, last I was told. And I just want to see it consistently from him, because if he's going to be sliding in and playing a larger role inside and say 80% of his snaps come from there, he's going to have to be much better against the run. And at 290 pounds, that's well big enough as a defensive tackle. But I want to see him being able to anchor. I want to see him be able to block shed. We saw glimpses from Jalen Logan Redding last year. I think back to that Iowa game. It was a good game for him. But it's now in his third year of extensive playing action, which he'll be going into. Can he take that next step? Because he is very likely going to be the starter at three technique alongside Eastern. Those two are going to be counted on to play a bunch of snaps. And even behind them, Luke, I think it gets a lot more ambiguous, where it wouldn't shock me to see Anthony Smith, now that he's 285 pounds, get some reps inside. Both, I think, if you're looking for an expectation for Anthony Smith, which he was outstanding at the practice on Saturday, now he's in year three overall in this program, going to be going into year two of extensive playing time, I still think he's a year away from probably hitting that all Big Ten ceiling, but it wouldn't shock me if he takes a really big leap this fall. Now, where could Anthony Smith play? The former four-star from Pennsylvania, number zero. You saw him out there last year. I think he played about 300 or so snaps. I think he has a Jalen Logan Redding type of role, if you ask me, from last season, where I just mentioned Jalen alternated between five technique and three technique. It wouldn't shock me to see him, Anthony Smith, do that same thing this fall. How does that happen? Anthony Smith potentially plays on rundowns because Ja Joyner's not very good against the run. And then on passing downs, he slides inside. Ja Joyner comes onto the field. And then that's how you make it work. But I do think Anthony Smith's headed for a role where he's going to see more snaps. We'll talk about him a little bit more, too, in that defensive end talk. But he's going to be going from 300 snaps to probably somewhere around 450 was be where I guess. It's just, Luke, after them, I have a lot of questions. Is it going to be the Clemson transfer Darnell Jeffries? People are thinking to themselves, boy, I don't remember Minnesota taking a defensive tackle.
Yeah, transfer. He was injured last year.
It's because he was injured. He tore his ACL in fall camp. He hasn't played in a while. And when he did play back in 2022, he only played about 100, 125 snaps defensively, and it was just okay. Now, he's more of a three-technique body, but he's 24 years old. You'd hope that he's able to help you there. We also will be able to see some of Purim's Logan Richter in his sixth year, which I Logan Richter feels like he's been here forever. Now he has because it's year six. But if you're looking for, and I love to make this analogy with him, and I know some people get frustrated with me about it, but he is your Pat Williams run stuffing one technique, where when you're playing against the Wisconsins and the Iowas and the Michigans, and you need a 340 pounder in there to eat the A and B gap double teams, that's where Logan Richter is going to come in. But I would love to see him do a better job of anchoring, do a better job of block shedding, especially because he's 24, 23 years old as well in his final year in the program. Could it be someone like Nate Becker heading into year four, someone that saw a little bit of time last year, a walk-on from Maple Grove? He's hopefully going to be on that Sam Renner trajectory if everything breaks right for him. But is there a triple-digit snap role for him? Or could it be one of the younger guys like Theo Randall or Martin Owusu? Here's the reality, Luke. I feel really good about Devin Eastern. I feel all right about Jalen Logan Redding. And then I have to feel something about somebody else because Anthony Smith can't take all these reps inside. And I don't want him to take all these reps inside because I'd rather see him be powerful against tackles than I would be against guards and centers. But they need somebody to step up here. I mean, Winston Delighted-Boudere needs Darnell Jeffries or Logan Richter or Nate Becker, Theo Randall, somebody here to make a move in fall camp to solidify themselves that Minnesota feels comfortable playing four defensive tackles because Eastern can't play every rep. You don't want him to play every rep because you want him to be fresh in the third and fourth quarter. Same thing goes with Jalen Logan Redding. So I feel okay about defensive tackle right now. But like I said, it comes down to the depth. You're old here, and you have some experience with guys like Jeffries and Richter and Becker, but you also need a guy like Theo Randall to hopefully make a step as a redshirt freshman. There just needs to be some solidification of roles, and whatever roles that defensive tackle 3, 4, and 5 have, they need to be really good when they come in for those niche spots.
Yeah, so when we talk about defensive line in general, I know we're focusing right now on defensive tackle. We at least saw a fair amount of rotating, right? Like this is a group that, or this is a staff historically that has not played guys a significant number of snaps. They rotate very consistently to your point to try and keep people fresh. And I expect under Heatherman that will be the same for the entire defensive line.
Yeah, that is my expectation. I would also say, as much as it is rotating guys, it's also positional flexibility,
yeah,
which is going to be something that you're going to see a lot of. Well, like I said, Devin Eastern can play either defensive tackle spot. Jalen Logan Redding can slide inside. He can slide outside. Same thing goes with Anthony Smith. And that's one of the things that Corey Heatherman talked about on Saturday after practice was they feel like they're very versatile with guys can play multiple roles. Now, that's great. But you have to excel at least one of these roles. It's great to have the versatility, but it's only a plausible option if you're good at both roles or multiple roles, whatever it may be. And so while I'm excited about the positional flexibility aspect where you can get maybe some of these younger longer, more explosive pass rushers onto the field on passing downs. You also have to make sure that they know what they're doing, that they can remain fresh. There's a lot of things that have to be figured out yet at this defensive tackle spot.
All right, so let's talk a little bit of defensive end. Obviously, Ja Joyner is the one that we expect to, you know, to have a significant season. He's remembered, you know, in part because of the many times that he gets held and it's not called. But he also has been able to find a way to get to the quarterback. But also at defensive end, you know, they've got some young guys with quite a bit of promise. And then you've got a Danny Strigow was he on Fornelli's all Big Ten team, which was a little bit of a head scratcher in terms of you thought it would be Ja Joyner, but he is a very good player as well.
Along with what I'm sure is Danny Strigow's uncle Tony. I don't know if there's an uncle Tony.
Yeah, I just Strigow, got the wrong name, you know.
I bet you there is a Tony Strigow, and I bet you he's got a heck of a deli. I bet you he makes a mean cold cut. I mean, he sounds like he should, but Danny Strigow was on Phil Steele's, I believe, second team.
Okay, sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's where, to me, Luke, I can't figure this one out. I'm going to need your help. Okay. I haven't seen a single all Big Ten preseason list with Ja Joyner on it, and I don't understand why.
I think that maybe the stats don't jump off the page for many people. I don't know I don't know how they're trying to reconcile this, because I think he led the team in sacks last year, but maybe they're incorporating number of snaps or something. The other thing is, you know, we see the impact that he has where he isn't necessarily making a play, but he's garnering a lot of attention, or, you know, there isn't nearly enough laundry around him. But in general, we know the impact he has and how much of a focus the defense has on him. But yeah, it's a little bit perplexing for me as well. I just imagine is they're not watching all the games.
I don't understand it. I know that Danny has more total tackles, but you look at, if you go really deep into the weeds and you get into like the Pro Football Focus pass rush win rate, his was the fifth best, that being Ja Joyner's, in all of college football last fall. He had an absurdly high 23% win rate. It's probably why he also had a 90 PFF pass rush grade. 90, I will remind you, an average, dead average Pro Football Focus grade is 60.0. So if you're in the 90s, you're doing something at an elite level. Now, is Ja Joyner not without his faults? He certainly has some, or at least he did last year, where he was below average against the run, and then he played a ton versus the pass. Now, I know there are some people listening to this podcast who thought, and I saw your tweets or your texts or your emails, your carrier pigeons, smoke signals, whatever they may be, that they thought Ja Joyner wasn't playing enough on passing downs. Luke, Ja Joyner played 2/3 of his snaps on passing downs. He played the third most amount of pass rush snaps on the entire defense. And it's only because Jalen Logan Redding could kick inside at times. And then Kyler Baud was usually out there as well. He played a ton on passing downs. I know you want to see more of him. I want to see more of him. But the thing I want to see is, can Minnesota complement Ja Joyner? What do I mean by that? Part of why Ja Joyner has 46 pressures and only a handful of sacks is because he needs more help from the defensive linemen around him. If Ja Joyner, who's one of the best speed rushers you'll find in the Big Ten, one of the best speed rushers to watch in a Gopher uniform in the next decade, only has a handful, just over a handful of sacks, I believe, and 46 pressures, it's because the quarterbacks are constantly stepping up in the pocket around him. How does that happen? Well, if Joyner turns the corner on a tackle and there's no A or B gap pressure from the defensive tackles in terms of getting knockback, in terms of not allowing that quarterback to step up, that's where Ja Joyner can turn these 46 pressures into hopefully a double-digit sack season, which, oh, by the way, he would then become the first Gopher since Willie Van de Stig in 2007 to surpass that double-digit sack number. Yes, you are listening to that. That is correct. You're thinking to yourself, well, Carter Coughlin had to have surpassed that number. He came close. He was very close. 9.5 sacks was his season high. So if Ja's going to get help, because he is going to be able to see as many double teams as he's ever seen. And maybe not double teams, but what I mean by that is if he's going to be lined up outside the tackle, the amount of tight ends and running backs chipping him this year is going to be in an all-time high. They are going to shift protection to wherever Ja is to make sure that he gets at least a shoulder by somebody, which means Luke Skye, Phil Steele, second team all Big Ten, Danny Strigout.
Danny.
The rest of these defensive linemen are going to have as many one-on-one opportunities as you're going to see. Now, I feel like Danny Strigout's career is a little bit underrated by some people, maybe even myself, considering he's going to be going into his third year of significant playing time. He's been an above average Pro Football Focus graded player each of the last two seasons, 70 plus PFF grades. The thing I want to see with Danny, and he's going to play a ton at rush end, so that position is still going to be within this defense, is what is the next step in his pass rush? It's something that his position coach, Winston Delady-Boudere, has talked about, and I'll even give you a quote from Winston. I think the next step for Danny is to continue to improve his pass rush. Not only that, but to capitalize on making plays he should make. So he was very much a beneficiary of Minnesota's pass rush last year. I mean, he tied, I think, a conference play at least, Ja Joyner for sacks. Yet he had 21 pressures. Ja Joyner had 46. Now, if Danny is going to be seeing as many one-on-one opportunities as he's potentially seen, he's got to make the most of it. And I would love nothing more than Phil Steele to prove himself right here with this second team all Big Ten selection.
No doubt.
But if he's going to find a way onto a second team all Big Ten list, he's going to have to be 8-9 sacks.
All right. So let's talk a little bit, Ryan, about linebacker.
I got a few more defensive ends I want to get through.
Really? Okay. Right. No, that's fine. I didn't know you were going to go three deep. I know that we have a tendency to go three deep, but let's do this. I'm ready for it.
Well, we went a couple deep on defensive tackle. I've only talked about two ends. Anthony Smith is someone that's going to see more snaps. I talked about him a lot already. But it wouldn't shock me to see him play a lot on early downs at five technique, which is where Jalen Logan Redding was. I'm excited for Anthony Smith. I just think he's probably a year away from really starting to become one of the best defensive linemen that Minnesota has. He has the ability to do it this fall. I'd love for nothing more for him to do it this fall. You look at him, he's the first guy you want off the bus at 6'5 plus, 285 pounds. I just want to see him put it all together. And then I'd also be remiss if I didn't talk about what does life behind Danny Strigout look like, Luke? Because Chris Collins ain't here no more.
Right.
The UNC transfer. Somebody's going to have to take 300 to 400 snaps at rush end still. I would probably say the favorite in the clubhouse a week into fall camp is Jackson Howard, which I think there's a sigh of relief from some Gopher fans who are thinking to themselves, Ryan, all I do is use him in NCAA 25. He's really good. What do you mean the Gopher staff doesn't know if he's going to be there? I know nobody wants to hear this, and you can send me your hate mail because you already do. I think expectations for him this fall, for me personally, are very minimal. Nobody wants to hear that, but folks, he is a redshirt freshman. He has been in college for 18 months. Is he ready for 300 snaps? That'd be quadruple the amount of snaps he's ever played in his life. It's year one at potentially a significant role. I just don't want to heap expectations onto a guy before I think they're ready for them, before I think he's ready to hit those goals. Now, he's certainly a different body type at rush end than a Carter Menz or a Lucas Finnessy or a Sam Macy, which I'm not saying is good or bad. I just think it's interesting. If you look at Jackson Howard, he's actually a pretty filled out 245 pounds, in my opinion. And that's where you look at a Carter Menz or a Sam Macy who may be a little taller, a little longer, a little bit quicker. That's where I think Jackson Howard is going to be more in that Strigout power rush, where Ja Joyner is someone that is about speed, speed, speed. Danny Strigout is more of a, I'm going to beat you with brute force. And I think that's where Jackson Howard is going to be. Now, he obviously has some twitch, but I'm not counting out Finnessy and I'm not counting out Carter Menz. I think Carter Menz is still a year away. I'm looking at him on Saturday. I think he's got another 10, 15 pounds. He is going to be your next speed rusher to come out because I think Sam Macy is going to need another couple of years yet. But to me, Luke, just like we talked about at defensive tackle, I want to see a little bit of depth here because Ja Joyner and Danny Strigo, they're among the best starting defensive ends that you're going to find. They're very experienced. They have some ceiling to them yet, but it's the drop off to the guys after. Anthony Smith, I like a lot. I want to make that very clear, but he can't play everything. So is it going to be Jackson Howard stepping up into a bigger role? Is it Lucas Finnessy stepping up into a bigger role? Carter Mens? Someone also has to step up here over the next 3 weeks.
Isn't Finnessy coming off an injury too last season? So like,
correct.
Yeah.
Didn't see much of Lucas Finnessy at all because of an injury. I think it's the residual effect. I'm pretty sure from that 2022 Iowa game, which is where he was injured, I believe.
And he played a pretty big role in 2022.
Does he have that twitch back? Does he have that get off back? We're talking about a former high school corner at defensive end now. So it's going to be, I think Finnessy versus Howard is an underrated camp battle, and it's going to be one I'm going to be very curious to see how it continues to progress.
All right, now let's talk about linebacker. That cool?
Nah, that's probably fine.
Okay. So last season, linebacker was probably defined by the injury to Cody Lindenberg, which kept him out a good portion of the season. And then you ended up having a lot of pretty young guys playing major snaps, right? Maverick Baranowski, Devin Williams come to mind. Even I'm going to forget the guy that started in the, not the bowl game, but was it the Purdue game? Was it Kingsbury?
Yeah, poor Matt Kingsbury.
Yeah, just like that was obviously a tough game for him. But again, these are young guys. You hope that, you know, the experience that they got this year will just lead to better outcomes on the field for him in this 2024 campaign.
You hope so. I'll say this. I wrote this afterwards Saturday in terms of what are my biggest question marks on this entire team. It might shock some people to hear, if you didn't read it on Saturday on Gopher Illustrated, I think my top three question marks about this team are all on defense. Like offense, they got their own issues potentially at receiver and whatnot. But linebacker is squarely in the focus of the number one most, how do I want to phrase it? There's a lot of things that have to be answered here. I think the most interesting part of the offseason was Corey Heatherman not bringing in a transfer linebacker. Now, why is that? To me, that would have been a spot I would have circled immediately after the season and said, yeah, we're going to do it. Like, I can't imagine that they were worried about losing some of these younger guys. Now, in the portal era, you always have to be worried about something like that. But we saw how, if anything could go wrong, it went wrong at linebacker. You have Lindenberg last year get that fall camp injury, which leads all the way until the Michigan State game. Now, he ends up getting a different injury in September on his road to recovery, and then we don't see him until the Michigan State game. But how did they get there at linebacker? Well, if you may remember, Braylon Oliver hit the portal, went to Georgia Tech. Donald Willis hit the portal, went to Western Michigan. And then they took a Western Michigan transfer by the name of Ryan Selig, who wasn't very good at all. And he was picked on quite a bit during his Gopher tenure. It was not a Jack Gibbons situation. So I don't know if there was a little bit of hesitancy from higher up that, boy, Selig really didn't work out. I don't want to just take a guy to take a guy. But now you're putting all the eggs into the basket of the Maverick Baranowskis and the Devin Williams, the Derek LeCaptains of the world. And yeah, the Tyler Stolskys and the Matt Kingsburys, but there were just way too much inconsistency. Now, that's what happens when you have to throw out Maverick and Devin into these full-time roles when maybe they're not ready yet, or maybe it's just because it's year one of them getting significant playing time. But they had their moments. Both of them did. I mean, Devin Williams ended up playing over 700 snaps. He started all 12 games in the regular season. Baranowski dealt with some injuries towards the end of the season. It's interesting, Luke, because when I asked Heatherman, how do you see that non-Cody Lindenberg spot right now? He mentioned Maverick, expected. He mentioned Devin Williams, expected. And he said one other name, which I wasn't expecting to hear, and that is fan favorite, oh, captain, my captain, Derek LeCaptain.
Really?
Which talk about another guy who missed the entire season last year.
Yeah.
He's been a special teams ace in his career starting in 2021, 2022. Folks will remember he scored that rushing touchdown back in that 21 season because Minnesota got decimated again at running back. But it'd be a great story if it clicks. Like Derek LeCaptain, the former walk-on special teams guy, gritty linebacker from Wisconsin. He's only played 57 defensive snaps in 5 years. I just, like, there's a path to them being better.
For sure.
There is. But here's what I would say. It starts with they have to be a lot better in their tackling, which both Devin Williams and Maverick Baranowski missed double-digit tackles. I mean, Cody Lindenberg did as well, which is a little bit of a concern. That is the knock against Cody, by the way. I mean, you won't find somebody higher on Cody than me. Remember when he signed, I made the proclamation of which made it to Badgerville that I thought Cody Lindenberg was going to have a much better career than Caden Johnson.
What is Badgerville?
I don't even know if it's a website. I got the in-laws coming into town this weekend. They're all big Badger fans, so we usually just refer to random Badger fans as Badgerville.
Okay.
Might be a website. I have no idea. It probably is in this day and age of URLs, but that's the knock against Lindenberg. Is he has the ideal size, he's got the ideal length, he's got sideline to sideline speed, but he misses too many tackles. And that's been the theme, or at least it was last year. I mean, I'm looking at the Gopher defense, Luke, and I'm looking at, according to Pro Football Focus, missed tackles. Devin Williams missed 13, Maverick Baranowski missed 11, Cody Lindenberg missed 11. You can't have that many missed tackles and expect to have a good run defense, to be able to cover. I mean, that was one of the knocks against Devin Williams last year, was Devin Williams allowed 35 receptions and coverage for 4 touchdowns. 85% of passes were completed against them. I have a lot of questions about linebacker. I don't have a lot of answers, which frustrates me. I only can imagine how it frustrates the listener. But if I don't have any concrete data to support some, I'm not going to go out and be a shock jock, Luke. It's just, someone needs to step up here, and whoever, if that's Maverick, if it's Devin Williams, if it's Derek LeCaptain, Tyler Stolsky, Matt Kingsbury, I don't care who it is. I just want to see consistent tackling. I want to be able to see them cover someone, because part of why they couldn't stop the run and part of why they gave up so many explosive plays is they couldn't cover anybody across the middle, and they missed too many tackles in the hole. So instead of 2nd and 9, it was 2nd and 3 or 1st down. So Corey Heatherman's got his work cut out for him, especially because he elected not to take a transfer linebacker.
All right, so let's talk secondary. Maybe we'll start on the outside at corner. This is a group that is now led by veteran Justin Wally. He now will be starting for what? This has got to be his 4th season, right? And so he is someone that we have come to – count on, has made some big plays, definitely has given up some big plays at times as well. But I mean, that's just the life of being a corner, I think. So he is by far the best corner they have on roster and by far, the elder statesman.
He is. And I'm trying to think of how I want to phrase this, Luke, because I don't want to tell you Justin Wally hasn't been good. He has been good. The question I have is, can Justin Wally be great? Can he be?
That's a good way to say it.
Can he be an Eric Murray, a Brian Body Calhoun, a Benjamin St. Juiced type of final season at Minnesota? Because you look at his Pro Football Focus stuff, it's been really good. He's had an overall grade over 69 in each of the last 3 years. He's coming off a season of which Pro Football Focus said was his best against the run, his best tackling season. But it was also one that he took a step back in coverage. Now, recency bias is a hell of a drug, and people remember he didn't have a great bowl game against Bowling Green. I also think back to that Northwestern double move touchdown that was on Wally. I want to see Justin Wally be great. And if Justin Wally is great, he's going to have an all Big Ten season. He's going to be an NFL draft pick. But I want to see him take that step that I thought we were going to see last year. Now, maybe it was injury related. He missed most of the spring, or he was coming back from some type of a injury from an offseason cleanup. Now he's healthy. And in that same breath, it's also going to be interesting to see if Ethan Robinson, the Bucknell transfer, can be as good as I think a lot of people at the Gopher Football Complex think he can be. If you don't know much about Ethan Robinson, I'll give you the cliff notes. 31-game starter at Bucknell, was one of the best players in the Patriot League, which is the FCS. It's an FCS league. He was the top-graded corner last year in that league in both overall grade and coverage. He also led Patriot League corners last fall with 27 defensive stops. Now, what does PFF define as a defensive stop? I got that for you. Don't worry. Tackles that constitute a failure for the offense. I think that Ethan Robinson is going to be better than what we saw from Trey Jones last year. And I thought Trey Jones had an above average season in the Big Ten. So the question is, you have Justin Wally, who has nearly 2,000 snaps at the Big Ten level defensively. Ethan Robinson has almost played 2,000 snaps at the FCS level. And oh, by the way, you also have nickel Jack Henderson there, who has over 2,000 snaps. It's going to be hard to find a nickel and outside corner trio with more defensive snaps than Wally, Robinson, and Henderson. The question is, for each of the three in their final season, can they go from good players to great players? Can one of them do it? Can two of them do it? God forbid, can all three of them do it? That's going to make me feel exponentially better about the defense. If the answer is, if I set the over-under at 1.5 of those three players, Luke, if it's the over, Minnesota's going to have a pretty good defense this fall. If it's under 1.5, I don't know how much of a step they'll actually take. And that's where, to me, you need your dudes to be dudes. Does that make sense? You need your Definitely. Great players to be great. And so that's where Justin Wally, I hope, has a great year. Ethan Robinson's capable of it. Jack Henderson's capable of it. But the thing I have hesitancy about at corner, Luke, isn't those two guys. It's life behind them, because if you have 4,000 snaps a corner, that means there's not a lot of snaps behind them. So the first guy I'll mention is Zaquan Bryan. I think he's someone that has asserted himself into a bigger role here this offseason. You talk to anybody around the complex over there in Dinkytown, Zaquan Bryan's name is usually the first one that comes out of their mouth when talking about who's the next guy up. He redshirted last year. You saw him play bigger roles against Wisconsin because of injury and in the bowl game as well. But he's only a redshirt freshman, doesn't have a ton of experience. Rylan Kelly, a Canadian that Minnesota took a couple of years ago, doesn't have a ton of experience, is the best-looking corner that you will find in the Big Ten. He's 6'1 plus, incredibly long, incredibly fast. It's just, can he put it together? Can he be consistent in his technique? Can he be consistent in coverage? And then behind them, you have guys like Evan Redding. You have Sam Madu. Mike Gerald is true freshman as well. That's my concern, Luke, is just like on the outside, even behind Jack Henderson, Craig McDonald is still there. I know a lot of people ask me, Ryan, where is Craig McDonald? He's stuck behind a pretty good player in Jack Henderson right now. So at outside corner, Luke, they need to stay healthy, because I don't know that you want to be breaking in multiple brand new corners, because then I'm going to have some PTSD back to last year when you were breaking in multiple brand new linebackers. Yeah. Now, it's not a one-to-one transfer. Nothing in terms of football. It really is the transitive property, but they're very top-heavy at corner. I'll say that.
All right, so let's talk a little bit of safety. You know, are
Miss Tyler Newbin yet? Because I think I'm going to.
I was going to say, like, our Tyler Newbin watch has ended. He's off to the NFL. And honestly, if I think about it, there were times last year that I think they gave him almost too much freedom, and that sometimes felt like that resulted in some explosive plays both directions, right? Like great plays by him that turned into either a turnover or a big play, or alternatively it went the other direction. So I'm curious to see if they simplify things up a little bit, and maybe there's, you know, a touch bit of improvement in terms of explosive plays. Not a ton of experience coming back. There are guys that have gotten experience. You know, last year, Aiden Goosby comes to mind, as one, and a couple times for Goosby, it was like, man, just like he's there, just like couldn't make the play, right? So you hope, again, this is an opportunity where experience that they got last year translates into improvement this year. We all remember the Tyler Newbin first season. And remind me again, Ryan, who was playing besides Tyler Newbin? And they ended up switching positions.
Are you talking about late in the year last year, or no, back when Newbin got his start?
No, when he got his start.
That'd be starting New Orleans Saints.
Oh, yes.
Howden. I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, so then and then they switched. You hope this season, I'm not just saying that people are making switches, but you'd hope that, you know, you're going to see that kind of maturation from, you know, some of these younger guys. So curious to see, you know, what you think coming into this season. And I'm sure everybody just wants to talk about Coy Parrish.
Yeah, they do. That's all they want to talk about is Coy Parrish. Everybody's excited about Coy. Another guy that I continually hear is outstanding. Why he won't start game one against North Carolina. Now, here's what I'll say. I really hope that safety isn't 2023 linebacker. How do I want to phrase it? I think I've said that a few times now, so I apologize. But it's more so, if you're not as concerned about linebacker as I am, sure, I won't fight you on that. It's fine. But within the same tier to me is safety. Because as much as it is about losing Tyler Newbin, the player, to me, it's more about Tyler Newbin, the playmaker. I don't know who is the playmaker amongst the secondary members. Heck, I don't know who is the playmaker among the back seven now. And that's going to be something I'm a little concerned about. Because you at free safety, you're going to have very likely a three-man competition based on what we saw on Saturday between Coleman Bryson. You'll remember him, the 2022 Pinstripe Bowl MVP. Kerry Brown got the start at safety in the bowl game without Newbin as a true freshman last fall. He's going to be going into year two. And then, yes, the pride of Esko, Minnesota, Coy Parrish, is also asserting himself firmly into the mix. I will also say this. If Coy Parrish would have come in January, I don't think this is much of a competition by this point, and I think he probably would have asserted himself as the favorite in the clubhouse as we would have sat here today. But he didn't. I think the thing people have to remember about the journey that Coy Parrish has had as a Golden Gopher in these last 2 months is when he arrived in the summer, he was not healthy. For those of you who were really deep in the weeds, he got injured at the section track meet trying to go to state track. And he got injured, and so he wasn't healthy for most of the month of June. Now, when they came back from the 4th, he was healthy, went through all that, and now he's starting to really get up to speed. He's been putting a lot of time in the film room. But I think because of that injury, because of the fact that he came in June instead of January, it wouldn't shock me if he doesn't have much of a role early in the season. Now, I'm not telling you I know that definitively. The coaching staff doesn't know it definitively. They've only been working with him on the field now with pads and everything for about a week.
It'd be naive to think you knew after, like, you know, what is it, 5 or 7 practices? Like, that's just naive.
Right. And I just think, especially at safety, my prediction right now is you're going to see 4 or 5 safeties in every single game. I think everyone is going to have different roles. You'll think back to last season, back when Aiden Guzmi and Darius Green were both healthy. Darius Green played strong safety on rundowns. Aiden Guzmi came in on passing downs. Wouldn't shock me that if those two have the same role in 2024 until one of them asserts themselves. Now, particularly if you're asking me, I'm higher on Aiden Guzmi long-term than I am Darius Green right now. It's not a knock on Darius. It's more so me saying I really like Aiden Guzmi's future. Now, he's got to play up to that this fall. He's got to show more flashes this fall. Has to be more of a playmaker this fall. But we'll see if Guzmi can take the step. And then at free safety, maybe Coleman Bryson plays on early downs. And then Kerry Brown or Coy Parrish comes in on passing downs. And I also want someone to step up as a playmaker. Because think about where this secondary would have been without Tyler Newbin last year. Now, Tyler Newbin is such an outlier. That's why he is now the all-time leader in interceptions at this university. But I want to see something. That's one of my biggest concerns for the defense overall is who is going to be that playmaker. We've seen Wally do it at times, but we need to see someone from the safety room step up. We need to see a linebacker or two step up. Force fumbles, interceptions, deflections, whatever it may be, this defense also needs to create more turnovers. As PJ has said here in the last few weeks, they need to create more explosives.
Yeah.
So who is that going to be at safety? Still very much to be figured out.
Yeah, I agree with that. They have to create more explosives, Ryan. But I think more than anything I want is them to limit explosives. Like that is the area that we saw them regress more than anything last year. Assuming they can
over the middle.
Yeah. I
mean, they were hemorrhaging explosive plays over the middle, whether it was safety, linebacker, wherever it may be. They just have to be consistent. And then if you really want to get greedy with it, it's about the playmaking ability.
Yeah, for sure. It will be interesting to see how this defense adjusts, obviously with under the tutelage of Heatherman. And you mentioned the blitz piece. Like, will they blitz more? Obviously, I would be a little bit surprised if they blitz more, just knowing PJ's kind of risk averse nature. But I am fascinated to see where things will go this season and what kind of maturation we can expect from, you know, some of those guys that got meaningful minutes last year meaningful snaps last year. But let's transition over to special
teams. I have one more thought before we get to your guy, Bob Ligachevsky.
He is my guy.
He is your guy, Bob Ligachevsky. He has been coaching football now for 40 years at the college and NFL.
That's older than me.
That's older than both of us. But going back to that defending somebody over the middle, it wouldn't shock me to see Justin Wally slide inside and then getting more reps for Zaquan Bryan. Zaquan Bryan has had an outstanding camp. Now, I just want to temper expectations because he's just a redshirt freshman. We haven't seen a lot of him. But if you want to get excited about a corner long term to really keep an eye on here, it's going to be number four, Zaquan Bryan.
Okay. So let's talk about Ligachevsky's lads, huh?
Ligachevsky's lads. Is that on a t-shirt now?
It's going to be probably if we ever did a t-shirt, we call them Ligachevsky's lads. Okay. So number one, you brought up the fact that Kesich is an interesting personality. Let's be real honest though. Minnesota has kind of a history of having some interesting personalities in that specialist room. You think back to Pete Mortel, right? He was
the OG, as the kids would say.
The OG. Sure. He was an interesting personality. Obviously, Dragan has been he's been really good. The whole camps with Kesich thing was good last year. I hope they're doing it again this year. I haven't seen it, though. Do you know if they are?
They've been doing a little bit here and there. I know they've been doing some stuff with NCAA 25, and he's there.
Oh, yes. Yeah, I have seen that.
Came to Big Ten Media Days, not being asked.
Okay.
So anything they can do to get Dragan Kesich in the limelight, he's ready for it.
Okay. So, and he was kicker of the year, if memory serves, correct? And justifiably
really
so.
Really good. And yeah. He was Big Ten kicker of the year, yes.
Yeah. So he's back. He's a walking touchback, right? He was pretty good on extra points. He was also pretty good in clutch situations. Did he miss two last year? I don't have the stats up in front of me.
He missed four kicks in total from field goals. He was 23 of 27, I believe.
Okay. And that for college is actually pretty, pretty good.
That's outstanding. Some would even say it's Big Ten kicker of the year quality. I mean, he made 85% of his field goals, which was second best in the conference. The seventh place team in field goal percentage was at just over 73%. So if you're a full 10% ahead of what everybody else was, plus you have the leg to make it from 50 plus, it should be another special season for him.
Yes. Okay. I think we can agree that Mark Crawford had probably one of his better seasons as Gopher punter. I don't think he was amazing by any stretch of the imagination with that statement, but he was better than he has been. This will be his final year, and I think he's basically your age, Ryan.
He is 30, I believe. Soon to be 31, I believe. If my memory serves from talking to him. So yeah, we're talking about a 30-year-old punter in college football. Welcome to the 2024 college football season.
Okay. And then remind us now, the Gophers just got a commitment or a signing, or, you know, I'm a little bit off because this isn't totally in my wheelhouse, but they got a baseball/football commit that is a punter as well. Is this individual still in high school?
He is from the Pride of the East Side in Woodbury, the better high school between the East two Ridge? Of them. East Ridge. Now, I screwed up the last name, and Chip's going to get on me a bit because he is the younger brother of former Gopher specialist, who I believe was the kickoff guy back in 2019, Grant Ryersey. I don't know if it's – I believe it's Ryersey. So okay. We're talking about Luke Ryersey, who is from East Ridge High School. He is the number one ranked baseball player in the 2025 class. He'll be playing baseball here at the University of Minnesota. And he'll also be punting, of which I believe he's a top 15 ranked punter high school-wise. He flipped his commitment from Alabama. Why? Because when he originally committed to Alabama, Nick Saban was the head coach.
Yeah.
And then Alabama recently told him, you got to pick football or baseball. And he was like, nah, I'll just go to Minnesota.
They'll let me do both. Yeah. Do both. I don't understand why.
I'm a Gopher fan. So if you're a Gopher baseball, Rube, and you haven't been excited about Gopher baseball in a while because they've been so, I think if I'm going to be nice about it, mediocre.
Yeah.
Just know that the number one baseball kid that is going to be a senior this fall is going to be playing baseball for your Golden Gopher team here in a while.
Well, and also be punting. I don't understand why you couldn't do both.
He and Caleb McGrath from Eastview are likely your two challengers for Mark Crawford's position, which, look, I have lamented the punting game for a long time with Mark Crawford there. Minnesota was fifth in net punt in the Big Ten last year.
Yeah.
I will take fifth in the Big Ten in net punt 100 out of 100 times. So I really hope that Mark Crawford can do that again this year. The only thing I'll ask of him, it's nothing I haven't told him to his face. I'd love to see him be able to flip the field a little bit more in those situations.
Yeah.
But we'll see if that's within the realm of possibilities now that he's got his AARP card at the ripe age of 30.
All right. So I think the topic we really need to talk about is returns, right? I think that's what you have focused on. I know you have a counter next to your desk. Yeah. That's what you're focused on.
Some people would say that, huh?
Yeah. So we had our mailbag special, which somebody referred to who will be winning the fair catch specialist position, referring to punts in particular. So I'm asking you to speculate, prognosticate on what we might see from Ligashevsky's lads here when it comes to returns.
That's one of the questions I have, Luke. That is certainly one of the questions I have, and I have no more clarity today than I do back when Bob Ligashevsky was hired. But we're talking about a return game that hasn't had a kick return touchdown since 2017. And I know some people over at the U hate when I say that. How about I say this for you then? Minnesota has played 74, that is the number 74, since Rodney Smith took the opening kickoff back against Nebraska. It's been 74 games since they had a kick return touchdown. Demetrius Douglas housed one in 2018 at Wisconsin. Yes. Great
punt
memory.
Return. Yeah.
That was 66-0 games ago. Why is your return unit just so consistently bad? That is my question. And I don't know that I have an answer to it. I believe that when I looked back at the stats from last regular season in those 12 games, the kickoff return unit lost 71 yards of field position for their offense compared to just fair catching every kick. Now, I'm talking about when the primary returner, whether that was Quentin Redding or somebody else, elected to field the kick. They lost 71 yards in the regular season. Now, it was a little bit different in the bowl game because they actually got a longer return. I want to know, Luke. I want to know like you want to know, because Ligashevsky, the new special teams coordinator, is someone that has been very aggressive in his recent history. I look at where he was at Syracuse last fall. The Orange returned 26 punts and only fair caught 21 of them. Compare that to the Gophers last fall, who returned a measly 8 punts and called for 33. So at Syracuse last year, Ligashevsky had his punt return game return more than 55% of punts, whereas Quentin Redding only returned 25%. Then you look at kick returns. Syracuse only fair caught 2 kickoffs all year. Minnesota fair caught 14. So who's going to win out here? Is it going to be Ligachevsky, who recent history would tell you he wants to be aggressive?
Mm-hmm.
PJ Fleck, not so much. So the question is going to be, is it going to be Quentin Redding, who I would tell you looks like the leader in the clubhouse based on Saturday night? We also saw guys like Christian Driver, Christian Hoskins, Coy Parrish did do some things back there, Lamecki Brockington, Daniel Jackson. And as much as it's about the returner, Luke, they need somebody to freaking block in front of them.
Yes.
Like, I think about the, when was the last time Minnesota set up a punt return? I feel like I'm taking crazy pills if you don't agree with this statement that Minnesota goes punt safe, where they just keep their defense on the field more or less, more than half the time. You're not even trying. You're just making sure that there's not a fake. You have that little faith in being able to set up a return in now year 7 or 8? How does that happen? Or even the kickoff return. You need better blocking up front, and I'm really hoping Ligachevsky can figure it out, because Lord forbid, if they can get anything explosive from the return game, God forbid multiple of them. I mean, sweet giblets and junipers, what do I got to do here? No one will sing the praises more of Bob Ligachevsky on a podcast episode than I will. If there is actually a return touchdown, we will open the episode with a montage of that clip from Mike Grimm.
Well, I don't know if we have the licensing rights.
I can make a few text messages over there so we don't get sued.
Okay.
But I want to see it happen, Luke. I have no idea, because when I talked to Ligachevsky back in the spring, he deferred everything to PJ. And so PJ, I asked him at media days, folks, how do you become more explosive? And he acknowledged they need to be more explosive in the return game. I hear what you say. I trust what you do. I'm tired of waiting on it, PJ. Fix the return game for the love of all that is holy.
All right. So I think special teams under new management hopefully is going to be good for your blood pressure. That's the one thing I'm most concerned about.
Not on medication yet, but if I have to keep watching that return game, I think I might be.
I am interested to see what your mentions look like. For instance, if it looks bad in game one against North Carolina, it's probably going to be a hot mess. All right. So I think that'll do it for defense and special teams. Any parting thoughts, Ryan, other than probably more question marks than most people are thinking about when it comes to defense. But we hope we can get back to a consistent, steady, and reliable defense.
Yeah, I just think that it's out of sight, out of mind, and everybody wants to focus on the offense because of the way that Fleck goes turtle shell. But why did Minnesota go 5-7 last year? It's a culmination of things, but I'd put the most in the bucket of the defense wasn't good. We went through the stats. They were horrible in run defense. They were horrible on third down, and they stunk in the red zone. They allowed 34 touchdowns, which was the second most in conference play. They need to get better in the red zone. They need to be able to stop the run. They need to be able to stop explosive plays. And so that's where, if you want to be drinking everything through your maroon and gold colored Kool-Aid, Cody Lindenberg stays healthy and he's outstanding. The defensive line is the most disruptive in the Fleck era, which Fleck said on record at media days, they're the most talented defensive line group he's had here at Minnesota. I hope they play to that. I really do. But as we've previewed, there's some depth concerns. They need their corners to go from good corners to great corners. And then they need their safeties to be able to help them. But if it goes pear-shaped again, you have injuries hit, and then thing just snowballs downhill from there. So where does reality lie? Probably somewhere in between. Yeah. I do believe there'll be a better defense, but how much better? I think that's a story that has yet to be told. And it starts against North Carolina, Luke, of which, by the way, they have the second most vote getter in the ACC for player of the year in a running back by the name of Omarion Hampton. That's going to be priority number one for just a few weeks from now. We'll spend a lot of time on him. Stopping Omarion Hampton in that run game is going to be crucial for Minnesota to win another Thursday night primetime national TV spot. But We got a lot of time till then, so we'll be back next week to talk to you again, Luke.
Yeah, it's fun to start talking about Gopher football again. It's going to be even more fun, Ryan, when we get to dissect the games ahead of time, but also break them down post-game as well. We did get confirmation that Derek Burns will be joining us again for conference football, so you're going to be stuck with...
What do you mean? What is he so busy doing now besides running the only collective that...
That's running. So he'll be able to join us for conference games. Won't be able to join us for the non-conference games. So we'll do our best to break those games down ourselves. But I'm looking forward to it, Ryan. Every day it gets closer, and you know it's gonna be a fun season, regardless of who's gonna take the most snaps at defensive tackle. So should be a blast.
Well, look, I know I love to get deep into the weeds. That's what Gopher Illustrated's for. I think that Ask Ryan Burns thread is, oh my goodness, it's approaching 4.9 million views now. I think we've gained another 500,000 since we talked last.
Also, your website can be a really good resource for those people that might be looking for a tailgating spot like myself.
Or just tickets.
Yeah, tickets. I think I just found a tailgating spot.
Parking for some members of my family for that North Carolina game. We got folks trying to sell some tickets. A great resource there on Gopher Illustrated.
All right, if you end up getting one of the home field kickoff 2024 kickoff boxes, please let us know. I want to see what they look like. I'm hoping to get one myself, but they are limited. Again, they go on sale or available for like pre-order on the 9th. And then again, please support Team Dinkytown Real Estate Group if you're going to buy or sell your home, because honestly what you're doing is actually supporting Gopher sports. So thank you again for listening, and go Gophers.